Stevie, thanks for being here this afternoon.
Thank you for having me.
First, we should explain that your real name is Stephen Dupin. At least that's the name on your book cover. But your stage name is Stevie D, right?
Correct. When I grew up in Owensboro, Kentucky, someone in the ninth grade, a friend, started calling me Stevie D. And then after graduating from high school, I went to Panama City Beach. And I said, I need a DJ name. I DJed at the Spinnaker down there. And I was like, what's a DJ name? So Stevie D. And then it led to the stand-up comedy for 15 years. And so now more people know me by Stevie D than Dupin.
Your book is getting attention largely because of your experience with prostate cancer. But the book is really about more than just cancer, isn't it?
Oh, definitely. Well, when I got cancer, when I was first diagnosed, I told my wife, well, it looks like I have to write a book now. She's like, write a book? You can barely read a book. What are you talking about? And just from writing comedy for 15 years, my brain always is in motion, you know, writing my thoughts. So I just started writing, you know, kind of a journal, a diary for about a year and a half. And it all came together. I got very lucky. And my publicist that's here, Fred Anderson, helped me get a publisher, and it all came together.
Was writing the book part of the whole healing process?
It definitely was. And I didn't want it to. I had just read Lance Armstrong's book right before I was diagnosed. And, you know, I admired him, you know, regardless of what drugs, steroids or whatever he did, that's his business. But, you know, I didn't want it to be just a cancer book. I had a lot of crazy stories, you know, checkered past. So I wanted it to be fun. I wanted it to be like an album of different. I wanted each chapter to be a vignette. So you didn't have to read it from beginning to end. You can jump into chapter 15 or chapter 3. You want to laugh, and I want it to be a roller coaster of emotions. And I've been very blessed with the reviews, and every, you know, the reviews so far have all said something to the effect of, oh, I laughed, I cried, you know, inspirational. And so I think mission was accomplished.
And you, I think you say it's written in a stream of consciousness.
Stream
kind
of consciousness. Yeah. I never took a writing class, and it drove my editor crazy. He was said, you know, are you thinking this, or did this actually? And I swear in the book, and I don't swear that much. Even in my comedy on stage, it's more PG-13. It's more of like what a 12-year-old boy thinks, you know, just silly guy stuff. But I'm not, you know, I don't swear much. I have two little ones at home, a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old. So I have to watch what I say. But in my thoughts, you know, I cuss like a drunken sailor. So sometimes when I was writing, because I wrote the book out of frustration, I was healthy. I exercised for 25 years, tried to be a good person. I worked hard. And then the type of cancer that I got, when I first went, I was 42. The average age is 72. So I'm like, what? You know, so I was more frustrated, and that forced me to write the book out of frustration. So sometimes I'd be really frustrated and say some bad words in my mind, but I put those on paper.
And you're saying you grew up in Owensboro. In your book, you don't hold back in describing some of your family members as somewhat dysfunctional, not always in a bad way, but it still gets a little uncomfortable at times, and often it's funny. Why did you decide to reveal so much personal information about your Kentucky relatives, and how have they responded to the book?
I was on a panel at Western Kentucky in Bowling Green at a book festival where ironically, I was en route to go to college and I never showed up. And then they invited me back when the book came out to speak. So I said, I'm a little late for class. But they asked me, when you're writing a memoir, you're writing an autobiography, do you have a responsibility to the subjects that you're writing about, the people that you're writing about, to clear everything with them first? And I said, I heard something once, if someone treats you poorly after that action, it's no longer their story. It's your story. And this was my story. And everybody that I respect and people that I love dearly, I didn't want to hurt anybody. So there's a couple of people I say, out of respect for you or this person or their profession, I will call them, you know, and gave them an alias. But for the most part, you know, it's all love. And there's only, you know, one or two people that I call out because they deserve it.
Now, you were obviously very close to your father, who passed away when you were young. How do you think he or maybe some of your other relatives influenced your decision to become an entertainer?
Well, I wanted to be close to my father, but my parents divorced when I was 4, and then he moved to Louisville, and it's a couple hours away from Owensboro, and we didn't have a car, so I might as well have been 10,000 miles away, because I didn't see him much. But I say a quote in the book from, there's an industry in L.A. called Homeboy Bakeries, Homeboys, and this father, Greg Boyle, takes in former gang members and reforms them and gives them, you know, pride and gives them a job and responsibility. who happens to be my wife's mother's first cousin. And he wrote a book called Tattoos on the Heart, I believe. I quote him in the book saying, and 95% of the gang members he's encountered, the males, there's a hole in their heart, the shape of the father. So I always felt, you know, that loneliness and wanted to be with my father. But ever since I can remember, I'd watch, variety shows, and I wanted to be an entertainer. I just did a charity benefit Monday night with Perry Gilpin, and we dressed like 70s opera, Grand Ole Opry. So I was looking for the Porter Wagoner suits, and I wanted to comb my hair on the side like Glenn Campbell. So I was looking for pictures to show the stylist. I was researching pictures of Glenn Campbell, how he'd part his hair on the side and had the sideburns. And I just remembered my mom used to tell me, when you were a little boy, Glenn Campbell would come on, you would sit in front of the TV and comb your hair just like Glenn Campbell. So I always wanted to entertain people, and, you know, whether that was stand-up comedy or, you know, singing or whatever, or hosting, you know, I wanted to be Dick Clark. I wanted to be a comedian. I wanted to be Richard Pryor. So I just kind of put all that together in a melting pot, and that's kind of what I do.
And that was a desire that started at a very young age.
Yeah, as far as I can remember, I would tell my mom, you know, I'm going to be on TV. And she's like, okay, you've been eating the paint chips off your Hot Wheels again, haven't you?
Stevie, you were talking about your event that you did with Perry Gilpin. That was the breast cancer benefit, Les Girls, mm-hmm. right? And you were teamed up with her, and she's best known as being Roz.
Correct.
On Frasier. How did that matchup occur?
Well, it's crazy. I had covered the red carpet for this benefit, and it's like an amazing who's who of Hollywood. The talent is incredible. You know, it can be Eric McCormack or Jason Alexander. Allison Janney was the host this year. So I'd been on the outside looking in for 5 or 6 years covering the red carpet for, you know, networks and interviewing these people. So I got to know a lot of the celebrities that would perform. And Perry actually started the benefit 14 years ago. So this year she came to one of my book signings in LA, and she was there, and she's a friend, and she said, why don't you do Les Girls this year? And I said, well, that's amazing. It's crazy. She said, let me talk to the committee. And it's like a tight knit, you know, it's a club that it's hard to get into, as far as the performers. So I said, I'm flattered, but what can I do? I haven't even done stand up in 4 years. And, she said, well, let me talk to them. And I got to thinking about it, and I said, well, I don't think stand up would work anyway. It's like a big musical production. And I said, well, what about a certain Texan would do a funny duet with me? And so I said, Perry, will you do something with me if I can find us a song? So I found a song, knowing that she's from Texas, I found a song from a movie called Walk Hard with John C. Reilly. And it's like a parody of Johnny Cash and all this stuff. So we took that song called Let's Duet, and it's kind of like an innuendo, double entendre, and I made it even filthier. So I rewrote some of the lyrics.
If that's possible.
Yeah, if that's possible. So we made it even a little more blatant, but still we played it innocent and funny and Opry style, and it was a big hit. Everyone cracked up. So,
are you doing a lot of cancer benefits these days from your experience?
I'm getting the opportunities to do more. The founder of the Prostate Cancer Awareness Foundation, Robert Warren Hess, really loves the book and praised it. So he wants me to do something with them, and I've got some other opportunities coming up. So I hope so.
Now, how old were you when you moved to Los Angeles, and what was it like for you during those first few years?
I was hungry. I was naive. Ignorance is bliss. I threw two suitcases in my car from Panama City Beach and an Elvis King Creole movie poster and jumped on the 10 West and didn't stop until I hit the beach. And I had a couple of buddies I had met from Atlanta that came out there. And so we got out and we all lived. It was about five guys living in a single bedroom apartment and sleeping on an inflatable raft. And it was just, you know, hard times for several years. I thought I was going to hit the ground running, and, you know, but I struggled for a long time, and took about 5 years to start getting my footing in comedy, and things started, you know, I did all right.
Do you have some periods of homelessness when you were going through that?
Pretty much. I've always had periods of homelessness, sleeping on people's, you know, couch surfing and stuff like that. More so between, you know, growing up and then from 18 to probably 23, 24, you know, there were times where I didn't have my name wasn't on a lease, and I didn't have a credit card. Let's put it that way.
Wow. Let's talk some more about your experience, what you went through with your prostate cancer. And of course, that's a significant part of the book. You were quite young when you were diagnosed. It was in your early 40s. Mm-hmm. That had to be a total shock. I can't imagine what that would be like. What did that hit you like a ton of bricks when you got that news?
Yeah. I just suspected something was going on. I ate organically, worked out every day. As a matter of fact, how I supported myself for years when I first got to LA, I talk about in the book, I became a personal trainer. So I wanted to make my own hours and have my times available to go on auditions and do comedy at night. So I was pretty aware what was going, something was funky in my body. And I started going to the bathroom a lot at nights. And I'd be in the gym and I'd see these commercials. Are you going to the bathroom? You know, maybe you have problems. I said, hey, wait, that guy's like 100 years old. That couldn't be me. But yeah, it sounds like my symptoms. So when I was 42, I went in to and asked my doctor, I said, could you check me for an enlarged prostate? I wasn't thinking cancer. I thought, I sit in traffic a lot in LA, and I thought maybe, you know, I've done some damage. I was not educated, you know, as far as, you know, all the inner workings, what's going on down there. But I just thought something wasn't right. And he did a prostate exam, did not do the blood work, and said, oh, you don't have an enlarged prostate. You must be drinking too much water. So huh. I wasn't thinking cancer. And 2 years later, I switched.
Neither was he at that point, obviously.
I think he just looked at the stats, you know, my age, and I was healthy. They ask you the generalized questions. Is there anyone in your family that's ever had any history of prostate? And I said, cancer. I said, no. So they ruled out cancer. They didn't go to the next level. They didn't do a biopsy. They didn't do a PSA. And 2 years later, I happened to switch insurance companies and just – part of the checkup, the routine checkup, they require you to do blood work. And the blood work came back, you know, the PSA was very high. So I did the biopsy, did all that, and they confirmed, yes, 2 years ago, what you suspected was cancer.
So you were misdiagnosed when you first started having symptoms, and it took 2 years for the doctors to figure out it was prostate cancer. But that 2 year miss actually turned out to be a blessing of a type, didn't
Absolutely. It was definitely a silver lining. My father-in-law, who happens to be a retired judge, I told him the story. You know, I'd gone in 2 years prior, I told him, and it gotten checked. And I said, I specifically said, we checked my prostate, and they didn't do the PSA. And now my surgeon is confirming, my oncologist is saying, yeah, that was definitely cancer. And if you'd waited 2 more years, I wouldn't be able to help you. So it's pretty scary. And he said, well, that sounds like a malpractice. You know, I said, I thought about it, and once you have this procedure that I had, a radical prostatectomy, you know, shop is closed. You can't have any more children. So if they would have diagnosed it the first time I went in, I wouldn't have my daughter who was born in that 2 year window, whose name happens to be Faith. So, nice. Yeah, so it all worked out.
It did all work out, didn't it? Now, how big a role did laughter and a sense of humor play in helping you to get through this?
Well, comedians, we're twisted. We're, you know, our brain goes to another place. We take the scariest thing, and I was already making jokes the next day, you know, about, oh, I got cancer. Now I get to write a book. I've always wanted an excuse to write a book. Maybe that's why I got cancer, so I can write a book. And, you know, just my wife is like, you're not right. You know, that's, you know, but you have to make light of it, you know. I was more silly. I was scared, but that's my defense mechanism is always to cover up the fear with jokes or, you know, and where my wife is practical and she was like a cave woman. I've got to go out and kill a bison now, and I've got to work. And I go, I don't think we have bisons anymore, but she's the tough one. And so I just, you know, like I said, if anything, I was more frustrated that it slowed me down.
Did you drive your doctors and nurses crazy with your sense of humor?
Pretty much. I told my doctor I was writing a book, and, you know, and actually my last, now I do an annual. It was a blood test every 3 months for a year, and then it goes to 6 months. And now it's 6 months for 5 years. But now I only have to see him once a year. So the last time I saw him a few months ago, I handed him the book, The Man with the Golden Hands.
You know, there are lots of books about prostate cancer. Why did you decide to write the Trans Am Diaries?
Well, I just feel my life is, it's crazy. Where I came from, how I grew up. And there's some colorful stories. You know, there's some stories, you know, about my checkered past, not all legal activities, and funny stories and, hopefully stories that will inspire people. So I wanted it to be, like I said, just a highlight reel of my life and not so much about cancer. I weave the cancer every few chapters with an update. And here and there, even there's situations, were had to go in for procedures that were embarrassing, that nobody would ever want to talk about what's going on down there, and people probing and, you know, undercover and
embarrassing.
So of course,
yeah, painful at times. Yes.
So I wanted to reveal all of that and make light of it. And once you can laugh about something, you take away, you know, what you're harboring inside, whether it be pain, you know, laughter heals. So whether it be something painful or embarrassing, or if someone's making fun of you, if you can laugh at yourself, you know, I think it's a better way of dealing with something.
So you have to be hoping your book will have an impact on other people's lives and let them know there is a light at the end of the tunnel if they're going through a crisis like this.
Yeah. And don't be embarrassed to get checked. Don't be embarrassed to talk about it. If I can laugh about it, and, you know, then I hope that inspires other guys to get checked more frequently. Don't wait. For whatever reason, men weren't advised to get checked until after 50. And like I said, my doctor would have told me it would have been too late. So now I did a lot of research on this subject, and Robert Warren Hess, who started the Prostate Cancer Awareness Foundation, you know, is encouraging men to get checked more frequently now and a lot earlier than they used to, because now younger men are getting it for whatever reason. We'll never really know for sure why I got it, but my doctor said it could be something environmental. Who knows what we're breathing in, what we're eating, what's, you know.
Yeah, you had no family history, did
you? No family history. I ate organically, but I live in Los Angeles. I live close to a freeway. I did eat a lot of red meat. Being from Kentucky, I loved my red meat. And ever since the cancer, we've been vegetarian at home. My wife only cooks vegetarian now for 3.5 years.
You know, there's a funny line in your book where you're talking about, as a kid, you ate a lot of bologna,
mm-hmm.
and at one point you gave it up and you make the comment, this stuff can give you cancer.
Yes, absolutely. And as a matter of fact, at the benefit Monday night, I was backstage and they had us Subway sandwiches, just like trays of Subway sandwiches. So I'm under the light holding this up, and Perry's like, what are you doing? You think there's bugs in there? I said, no, I'm making sure it's not bologna.
Make sure there's no bologna.
She's like, what's wrong with you? You're from, just eat it. And I said, no, I swore off bologna when I was 13 years old. I put down a bologna sandwich and said, I'll never touch bologna again. It could give you cancer.
Talk about, what are some of the early warning signs for prostate cancer?
Well, for me, I started going to the restroom a lot at night. You know, it went from getting up maybe once during the night to 2, 3, 4 times. And I thought, this something is crazy. And that's when I went in the first time. 2 years later, when I was actually diagnosed, it had progressed to an actual pain. So I definitely felt something was going on. I was going to the bathroom very frequently, and I just felt like something foreign, and there was an ache in my body. I tell a story in the book about being impaled in a certain area in high school with a pencil. And I asked the doctor, I said, I think I know how I got prostate cancer. I was stabbed in the junk with a pencil. And he's like, that's not your prostate, you hillbilly. Well, it's the same neighborhood, isn't it?
You know, I have to marvel at this, Stevie. Coming from such a dysfunctional family, you had some scrapes with the law, you had periods of homelessness, you had prostate cancer in, you know, in your 40s. How in the world have you managed to survive all this? Was there some turning point in your life that you can pinpoint?
Like I said, I've always known what I wanted to do since I was 5 years old. And I say in the book, ignorance is bliss. But it's not, then I retracted that after thinking about the prostate and to get checked for cancer, because men, we don't like to know what's going on with it. Oh, we're fine. I'm ignorant to anything. But if you wait till it's too late, then, you know, you could take preventative actions and your life would be a lot easier. But for me, the alternative was to what, work in a factory, or, you know, an education was never really emphasized, or, you know, there wasn't a lot of emphasis put on that growing up. For me, it was just like, good luck out there in the world. And I knew I felt like I had something in me that I wanted to share with the world. I like making people smile. I like making people laugh. I like being silly. So I always knew I wanted to entertain people. And, you know, being the class clown in school and winning all the talent shows, you know, in high school and being the class president, all that just fueled the fire. As the teachers would say, don't encourage him. So then I went down to Panama City Beach and became the host of all the spring break stuff. And each thing was just the next tier, the next level. And then I went to LA. It was a lot tougher, like I said, to get started than I thought. But once I got into comedy, it just fueled the fire. And, you know, I still love entertaining. I still like, you know, exploring different different media platforms and different areas of entertainment from now producing, writing, hosting my show out there. It's just all good. It's all fun.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, and it's still, I still got the same shtick. I'm still a hillbilly. And once you have that stigma, then you just, I embrace it. My set on my show out there, it looks like a double wide trailer. And my guests come on, and these are respectable people, you know, actors and comedians, and they're professionals, but they come on my show and they know they're going to drink out of a mason jar. And I joke about being a double wide, you know, and so everybody's in on the joke.
Is resilient a good word to describe you?
I'd be flattered, you know, by that description. But yeah, I mean, I just roll with it, and I wake up every day in a pretty good mood and thinking, okay, let's seize this day. I don't know. And I've always been that way, but the cancer did make me realize, you know, life is precious and could be short. There's no guarantee of tomorrow. So, you know, seize every day and enjoy every moment. And traffic doesn't bother me as much as it used to. And I say in the book, unless Ryan Seacrest is on the radio, and then then I'm getting out and walking, hitchhiking.
Stevie, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Enjoyed talking to you.
Thank you, Mark.